On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass at Agrible Nutrient Ag Solutions to discuss the weather forecast. It's another beautiful day, Eric. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, it's good to be back on a good, cool August day.
You bet. Hey, however, it's been probably as interesting a week in the Midwest as I remember. And usually, well, there's a lot of damage. There is a lot of damage. But this thing called the derecho, we haven't really talked about on our program yet. I'm wondering if you can tell me how often that happens and a little bit about what it is.
Yeah, so when we use the term derecho, it's just a term that we've been using in atmospheric sciences for a very long time to describe squall lines, you know, those lines of storms that often produce damage, usually over a multi-state area constitutes major crop damage or major damage to infrastructure or cities. And so that tends to be the when we use that terminology. But it is just a line of storms. It's just one that, well, for example, the one that went on Monday started off in South Dakota, cut across parts of Nebraska, then gained strength as it went through Iowa, eventually got into Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And along its way, which, by the way, that's 700 miles, it had an average speed of 55 miles an hour. And at times, the wind gusts were measured well above 60, of course, and we had reports that were between 90 and 110 miles an hour in some places in Iowa. So when we went back and kind of did a diagnosis of what it looked like, we needed to wait for the next clear day so we could get some high-resolution satellite views of what happened. And based on my assessment, I traced out a line of where I saw damage from space, and then I used some GIS tools to kind of give me an idea on how much damage I saw from corn and soybeans. And it was much clearer in Iowa, not so clear in Illinois. So we did have some pockets of damage in Illinois, including damage from 15 tornado reports in northern Illinois. But the number I came up with was 8.5 million acres. Some estimates go higher than 10 million acres of damaged crop. And we're going to continue to see as that crop has, some of it's been killed, that when we look down from space over the next week or so, we'll begin to see the change in the color, and it'll become much more obvious on these clearer days how bad this damage was. Now, these events do happen, I mean, yearly. We have quite a few of them, but the last time that particular part of the Corn Belt was hit this hard was all the way back in 2011. So it's been a while since we've seen this much damage to this much corn and soybeans right on some of the best ground that we have on the face of the earth. So it was a substantial event, and one that certainly was a bit of a shock, because the morning of that event, I remember producing my forecast saying, hey, everybody, just watch this area. We're going to need to keep a close. I mean, that's all I said. I said, the conditions are good here for a big squall and a big group of thunderstorms. But it wasn't until probably 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning that all of a sudden the alarm bells were going off in my head that, oh, this isn't just a line of storms. This is one that could potentially knock down millions of acres of corn and soybeans. So it was a tough one. We call that now casting rather than forecasting. And that's what you got to do sometimes when it comes to thunderstorms.
You bet. Hey, so we'll look forward to our discussion next week after you get a look at the satellites and are able to tell what more damage might really be done in some of those worst hit areas. Now, speaking of that, next week, gosh, it looks like it's just going to be flat out gorgeous, although there's no rainfall, I don't think, around during the week.
Yeah, but you know, if it's going to be this cool and we don't get the rain, we tend to be just fine. We've got plenty of moisture in the profile right here in this part of the Corn Belt. And on top of that, we might get cool enough in the evening to get some dews. And we know what dew will do in August, right, to this crop. And so the thing about it, though, Todd, and this is just on me, this is a little embarrassing, is the last 2 weeks that we talked, I had indications at that point that if we did get any sort of a cooler shot of air, it was just going to be that, a shot of it. I thought overall we'd maintain near average to warmer than average conditions. But now here we are 14 days into the month of August, and we've got a cool bias already. We only got a little bit of heat over the weekend, and that was shut down. And now over the next 2 weeks, big ridge is going out to southwestern United States. I'm talking a monster of a ridge. And the jet stream is going to flow right over the top of it and come down scaling toward us on this side. And what that ends up doing is just prevents any big heat coming in. What we would worry about this time of year is a big ridge that set over like Nashville to Little Rock. That would be the ridge that would just bake us and get us, you know, turned off from the precipitation. And I don't see any indication of that at all. So it does look drier in the forecast, but nothing has really shut down the Gulf of Mexico. So when we say drier, we just have to remember that we don't have the type of weather in place that's going to just completely block out any rainfall at all in the Corn Belt, but it is one that has less of it simply because all the action is going to be north of us and it's going to be west of us in terms of where that ridge is. And I'm telling you, it's going to be hot out west. Central Valley, California, seeing 110 degree days coming up.
Anything yet as an indication for September as we begin harvest?
Sure. So earlier this week, we had released some new long range outlook data from some of our global modeling centers. And big things that we are looking at here is we do have a week long La Niña we're monitoring, and it's still warm in the North Pacific. It's also warm in the Atlantic. The trend over the last decade is to have warm Septembers. We've just, when you look at the last 10 years, our Septembers have been warm. But when we look out this particular year, those signals aren't quite as strong as to whether or not it's going to be a warm one or not. At this point, though, the big wild card is going to be tropical activity. As you know, we already made it to the letter J with Josephine churning right now in the open Atlantic. That's 10 named systems so far. National Hurricane Center says, hey, if it's going to be what they think, we've got another 10 to 15 to go. So we could have a situation where we get set up for actually a nice transition into September, where we would expect normally things drying down and good progress toward harvest. But we could have that upsetting factor this year of a large tropical system that we just can't predict this far in advance. I'll just say this. I don't see anything going forward into September right now that's setting off those alarm bells. So when I look at those forecasts, to me, it looks quite favorable, especially even for some fall field work, should we be able to get this crop out. Because by the way, across where we live right here, we're 95% of the way to accumulating 2,500 GDUs as of today. So that crop's moving along.
Oh, sure. It's 2020. We'll be mudding it out by then.
I really hope not. Really hope not.
You mentioned La Niña, South America. That tends, I think, to have more of an impact there than here.
Well, it certainly is going to as we get into our fall, their spring, and then what's coming up for their summer. So we know that this is their dry time period. So it's normally very, very dry. And there are a lot of fires both set on pasture land to clear it out for, you know, for soybeans and corn and cotton and other crops, but also fires that are started just because of the dryness. When we measure it, it is drier than normal right now down there. And so the concern is, should that La Niña continue to gain a little more strength? And it's not strong by any stretch right now. But if it does, that could be something that keeps central Brazil away from planting aggressively. In other words, they got to wait for that rain to come in. And if it strengthens later, it's more of a problem for southern Brazil and Argentina as we go forward. So it's something to watch. But as I'm sure you know, some of the numbers coming out on the acreage reports for this upcoming growing season in Brazil are just enormous, maybe adding more than 3 million additional acres. And so that could put a crop at, what, 130, 132 million metric ton? I think the United States right now is laser focused on what Brazil could possibly do this upcoming season. So we'll watch that La Niña to see if it knocks back those numbers.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.